Aaron, we've just spent the day out in the bush looking at an experimental study area where you've been looking at birds over the last 20 years. Could you tell me a little bit, first of all, about the area where we were at?
The area we're at is called, it's called the Colling Lake Fragmentation Experiment. It is on the south side of Colling Lake, Alberta. And it was an experiment started in about 1992 to look at how different ways of cutting in terms of the size of forest patches that are left, how connected they are to each other, and how isolated they are from the surrounding forest might influence biodiversity, with a specific emphasis on how birds in particular might react.
And how did when did you get involved with this?
Well, actually, I mean, I've kind of interacted with Fiona Schmiegel, who started the project in 1992, since about 1992, as a scientist. But then I came to the University of Alberta in 2001. I started working with Fiona on a variety of other projects, including one called the Boreal Avian Modeling Project and a variety of things. And when Fiona left the University of Alberta to go work in the Yukon, I took over the experiment in about 2008.
Well, the amazing thing about this is it's a very long-term project. Today we're looking at it, it's 20 years. What does that say to you as a scientist? How does that help you out, having something that is so long-term?
Well, I mean, a lot of the experiments that scientists do these days, are often comparative, and they use existing patterns on the landscape. So they might look at a young stand versus an old stand and draw conclusions about what biodiversity, how it might have changed because of that change in age structure. But in this case, we can actually watch it from day one. This was when a clear cut or a disturbance was created, and this is how it's evolved and changed over 20 years, and not have to sort of rely on, you know, the vagaries of patterns that exist out in nature to deal with the experiment. We actually can understand temporal variability, so how things change year to year, what some of the natural variation that is out in the system, how it does actually influence our conclusions. And oftentimes we can't do that with these other kinds of experiments that we often do, which are just more comparative, and they tell us a lot, but they don't tell us quite the same level of detail that we can get from these.
How much data have you actually collected from this area?
Goodness me. Well, if we just talk about point counts alone. So point count is a point where, you know, a person stands and listens for birds for a period of time and records what they hear. We do about 300 point counts per week over a period of about 5 weeks. So we do about 1,200 a year, and we've now done them for 20 years, so that's about 24,000 data points. And that's just for the bird project itself, which is the long-term thing. Associated with that is vegetation data, a variety of other experiments that have been done in the area, including things like looking at nesting success of certain species, the breeding ecology of other species, how specific species use different parts of trees. So there's been over 20 publications coming out of the Colling Lake study on little different aspects over the last year than Fiona's lab, and my lab is now just starting to take over that area and hopefully can keep up with that kind of pace.
Well, one of the things that's interesting about this is that it has very important industrial applications. Can you give me some examples of how industry has used what you're learning in this experimental area?
Well, I mean, to start with, the idea of the experiment in the first place in 1992 was much more in fitting with the conventional harvest strategies of the time. And so it was to see what the impacts of those were. And I think part of that thinking, you know, around, well, these are some of the issues. Just by having this kind of conventional straight edges and, you know, small patches being created led some of the companies to think, is that even the way we should be doing it? So even after the experiment began, it very quickly led to, well, what are some different things we can do? And so, you know, that was kind of experiment one. Experiment two then became, what happens if we leave trees in cut blocks? What happens if we start cutting in curvy ways instead of straight lines? And those things actually all became their own experiments too. And so I think, if nothing else, just starting this experiment in the first place in 1992 started a philosophy or thinking about that we should do experiments all the way along as we do this and learn from what we're doing, so that, you know, if things are going dramatically different or something is particularly negative, maybe there's something we do about it.
You're using the information that you collect from this study area, but it's also fitting into something much bigger that you're doing. What's the bigger project?
Well, the bigger project's known as the Boreal Avian Modeling Project. Basically, it's a project coordinated by myself, Fiona Schmiegelow, Samantha Song, and Steve Cumming, who are all U of A alumni at some point in the past. And what we've done is we've actually asked all researchers, all companies, all consultants that we know of in the boreal forest of Canada, Alaska, and actually going into the lower 48, to say, could we get all your point count data like we've been collecting and put it in one database that's systematically designed so that all the information is in there in the same way? And what that allows us to do is, you know, now start to develop continent scale models that allow us to say, well, this is the density of birds in this part of the world versus over here. They react to forest age in the same way or in different ways in different parts of the world. You know, they like conifers here, but they like deciduous trees here. And together, those kind of models are allowing us to really now get to the first time to put in perspective how many birds are there in the boreal forest of North America. You know, is it 5 billion? Is it 10 billion? No one knows that number. And this data is actually going to allow us to do that. The second thing it's going to allow us to do is say, okay, we know how forests are going to change because forestry companies are telling us that. We know that there's some climate change projections that are going to happen. What might be the consequences? And we can now say, at a continental scale, this is the likely consequence for bird populations. Whereas, like Calling Lake is an individual study, it doesn't tell us that exactly. It tells us what's happening in that local piece of the world, which may be the same, it may be different. And so having that power at that incredibly large scale is, you know, is just absolutely amazing. The benefit of Calling Lake within the data set itself, though, is it's the thing that allows us to have the temporal variability. How much of the variation we see across the continent could be just annual variation. And there's no other place in Canada that has that length of data.
Well, when back in 1992, there was an awful lot of concern about what was going to happen to those birds, those neotropical migrants. What do we know about some of those?
Well, and you know, the answer to that is I often get asked the question, you know, how are the birds? And the answer to that question is the birds are fine. If you start to ask me about individual species, though, the stories become quite different. Many species benefit from human land use activities. There are species that are associated with early seral forests that do quite well. There are other species, though, that like older forests, and as that older forest declines in amount, I think it's a fairly safe assumption to conclude they're going to decline. Whether they're going to decline to levels that are causing us concern, I think, is the fundamental question that we're left with. And so that's where, you know, by collecting this kind of data, making these kind of models, we can say, well, you know, we're going to be to 50% of what the population once was, or 40%. And at least that we can make an informed decision about whether that's acceptable or not, rather than now, which is we assume things will be fine and don't really have support to back that up.
What do you see as being the legacy of this Calling Lake experiment?
Well, I think the Calling Lake experiment, one, is that it instituted probably a pretty fundamental shift in the way industry works with universities, and that was a very fundamental thing. It was one of the first companies I've ever worked with that was interested in doing experiments as part of their planning, and I think that really changed the philosophy for a lot of people in Alberta and other parts of Canada about how forestry should work.
And which company was that?
That's Alberta Pacific Forest Products has been the funder of this particular project. The area that we do work is also part of the FMA of Van der Waal Forest Products, and so both of those companies were involved in setting out the experiment, but ALPAC has been the one to fund it through the last 20 years.
Thank you very much, Aaron.
Thank you very much.